Quick indeed it was, that center and significance of the whole, and decidedly it thought its hour to have come. It strove towards the light. It sought to throw off the maternal husk. It gave birth to itself, as it were, rudely storming the narrow womb, without help from her who had so blissfully received the seed and nourished it in her body, but was powerless, despite so much sincere goodwill, to bring it forth. It was of no avail that the old woman prattled instructions and arranged her limbs, showed her how to breathe, to hold her chin and her knees. The next spasm of anguish destroyed all ordered effort. Under the sore punishment, she flung herself about regardless, streaming cold sweat and biting her blue lips. "Oh! Oh!" she screamed, and called in turn upon the gods of Babel and Jacob's God. Night came on. The moon's silver boat swam up above the hills, and waking from a fainting fit, she said, "Rachel will die." All those about her cried out, Leah, the maids, and all the other women, and flung up their arms in prayer. Then the monotonous murmur rose again and louder than before, like a swarm of bees, with which almost unbroken they had accompanied Rachel's labor. Jacob, holding her head in his arms and hearing her despair, only managed after a long pause to utter dully, "What sayest thou?" She shook her head with an effort after a smile. There came a pause while the attacker seemed to take counsel with himself in his hole. The midwife half approved this pause. They thought it might last some time, and Jacob suggested that they employ the interval to make a light stretcher and carry Rachel to Beth Lama, to the inn. But Rachel would not have it so. "Here it hath begun," she said, stiff-lipped. "Here let it end. Who knoweth if there be room for us at the inn? The midwife is wrong, for lo, I shall begin again, Jacob my husband, to bring thee our second son." Poor wretch, there could be no hope of her helping. She knew it even when she spoke the words. What in her heart she thought and knew, she had already said. And again, in the course of the night, between two periods of martyrdom, she let her knowledge and her secret thought be seen again, as with stiff lips, already swollen from the weakness of her heart, she spoke of the name they should give their second child. She inquired of Jacob what he thought, and he answered, "Lo, he is the son of the one and true wife, and he shall be called Benjamin." "No," said she, "be not angry, for my thought is better. And Benoni shall his new life be called. So shalt thou name the new Lord whom I bring thee, and he shall be in memory of Mami, who made him beautiful in thine and in her image." Jacob's skill in far-flung spiritual associations made him understand her almost without pausing to reflect. Mami, or the wise Mama, was a folk name for Ishtar, mother of the gods and shaper of men, of whom it was said that she made the male and the female babe lovely after her image. Rachel, in her mother wit and weakness, mingled the person of the divine creatress and her own motherhood, the more readily that Joseph oftentimes called her Mami. But for the initiated, whose thought took the right way, Benoni meant son of the dead. Yet she no longer knew that she had betrayed herself already, and took this way to make Jacob understand the truth in time, that he might not feel too sore a shock and lose his reason. "Benjamin, Benjamin," he wept, and said, "not Benoni." And then it was that he directed upwards into the silvery light of those worlds above their heads, almost as a confession that he understood. His question, "Lord, what dost thou?" To such questions there is no answer. Yet it is the glory of the human spirit that in this silence it does not depart from God, but rather learns to grasp the majesty of the ungraspable and to thrive thereon. Beside him the Chaldean women and slaves chanted their litanies and invocations, thinking to bind to human wishes the unreasoning powers. But Jacob had never yet so clearly understood as in this hour why all that was false, and why Abram had left Ur to escape it. The vision vouchsafed him into this immensity was full of horror, but also of power. His labor upon the Godhead, which always betrayed itself in his careworn mien, made in this awful night a progress not unconnected with Rachel's agonies. And quite in the spirit of her love it was that Jacob, her husband, should draw spiritual advantage from her dying. The child came into the world towards the end of the last night watch, when the heavens were palely brightening with the dawn. The old woman had to wrench it by force from the poor womb, for it was choking. Rachel could shriek no more. She had fainted. Much blood came, such a loss that the pulse in her wrist throbbed no longer, but flickered thinly. She lived another hour, but she saw the living child and smiled. When they brought her Joseph, she did not know him. The last time she opened her eyes was when the east had begun to redden and the morning shone in her face. She looked up in Jacob's face that bent over her. Her lids contracted a little, and she said, indistinctly, "Ah, behold, a stranger! Why then should I let thee kiss me? Is it because thou art the cousin from afar off, and we are both the children of one forefather? Then kiss me, and the shepherds by the well rejoice, saying, Loo, loo, loo." He kissed her, trembling, for the last time. She said again, "Lo, thou rollest away the stone for me, Jacob, my lover, with the strength of thy man's arms. Roll it now away from the grave, and lay therein the child of Laban, for I leave thee to go hence. How all burdens have been taken from me, childbearing, life-bearing, and it is the night. Jacob, my husband, forgive me that I was unfruitful and brought thee but two sons. But yet two, Jehoseph the blessed, and the little one, the son of death. And, ah, I am sore to go from them, and from thee too, Jacob, I am sore to part. For we were the right ones for each other, and now thou must muse alone and learn without Rachel who God is. Learn then, and farewell. And forgive, too," she breathed, "that I stole the teraphim." Then death passed over her countenance and put out its light. The humming of the exorcists ceased at a sign from Jacob's hand. They all fell upon their faces, but he sat, her head still in his arms, and his tears fell silently and unquenchably upon her breast. After a while they asked him if they should not now make a bier and carry the dead to Beth-lama or Hebron to bury her. "No," he said, "here hath it begun, here it shall end. Where he hath done it, there shall she lie. Dig a grave and hollow it out by the wall. Take fine linen from the pack to shroud her, and choose a stone, at once for the grave and to her memory. Then Israel will go onwards, without Rachel, and with the child." While they dug, the women loosed their hair and bared their breasts, and mixed dust with water to defile themselves for the morning, and sang to the music of the flute the lament, "Woe for our sister," smiting their foreheads and striking their breasts. But Jacob held Rachel's head until they took her from him. When the earth had closed above the beloved, on the spot where God had taken her by the wayside, Israel passed on and made a stage at Migdal Eder, an ancient tower. There Reuben sinned with Bilhah the concubine and was cursed.